Taking the forever out of forever chemicals. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. When the chemicals company DuPont unveiled Teflon in 1946, the idea of non-stick, no-stain pots and pans seemed like a miracle. We now know they contain forever chemicals, also known as PFAS, which don't break down and are in everything from cookware to clothing to cosmetics. The water millions of us drink is also now contaminated with forever chemicals, and research shows there's no safe level of exposure to them. With the EPA now rolling out limits on PFAS in drinking water for the first time, we asked Tasha Stoiber, senior scientist at the Environmental Working Group, about the tech used to filter them.
There are a number of ways to do it. There's granular activated carbon. When you use that for drinking water treatment, the PFAS basically just sticks to that media and you remove PFAS.
Is that a thing that you drop into a big pot of water or a big vat of it? How does that work?
I mean, there's a number of different types of granular activated carbon, but you can kind of think about it the same way as there's granular activated filters that you use in your home as well. Mm-hmm. So it's just at a different scale when you use it for community water treatment. They're quite large.
I'm picturing a giant Brita right now. Is that basically what you're saying?
You could think of it as a giant Brita. So at the drinking water treatment level, you have very large granular activated carbon filters that drinking water systems can install. And those are quite effective at removing PFAS. The PFAS stick to those filters and they're removed from the water. And there's a couple of other different ways that you can remove it as well. There are a couple of plants that have installed reverse osmosis membrane filters, mm-hmm. Which are filters that have very tiny pores and the chemicals are retained. And then you have clean drinking water on the other side. And then there's ion exchange, which works to remove PFAS as well. The downside is that from these processes, you do produce waste. For example, the granular activated carbon, it must be regenerated or you have to do something with the spent activated carbon media. Reverse osmosis, you do have a waste stream brine, you have to do something with that. And that is a bigger long-term problem as well, that there are not yet good disposal methods for the media that we use to treat drinking water.
It sounds like what you're saying is you can remove these forever chemicals, but you can't yet destroy them. That technology isn't there yet.
There are ways to do it, but we still need more information about how efficient it is, more information about the products of incomplete combustion that are formed during incineration. Incineration has been happening in practice, but there are a lot of questions about the air pollution that might result from it, or if it is being optimized as much as it can be. And we still don't know everything that we need to know about when incineration is happening in practice, if there is, in fact, air pollution that is resulting from it. So there are still a lot of questions that need to be answered, and we still don't yet have good disposal methods.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. We're back with Tasha Stoiber, senior scientist at the Environmental Working Group. Now, you've been focusing a lot of your research on filters for consumers. How do you think filters like that will play a role in all of this for consumers who want to start limiting forever chemicals in their drinking water at home?
Right. So we do recommend that people filter their drinking water at home. Granular activated carbon filters are effective at removing PFAS. Reverse osmosis filters are also effective at removing PFAS. But granular mm-hmm. activated carbon filters, those might be a bit more cost accessible to people, but you just have to remember to change out the filter, or else it's not effective.
Mm-hmm. And are you seeing innovation happening among clean tech companies working on water filtration so that people can filter these chemicals out at least somewhat at home?
There are more advanced and better countertop filters that are available now that actually are quite effective at removing PFAS from your drinking water. Mm-hmm. We did a quick short study of several of these pitcher type filters, and they were fairly effective at removing a number of different PFAS, which was good news.
Yeah, I saw some of them can eliminate up to about half of the forever chemicals that are in the water.
Right. And our tests showed for the PFAS that we measured that they were fairly efficient and removed almost all of the PFAS that we tested for. Mm-hmm. And other researchers have shown too that multi-stage carbon filters work really well also. But people should know that the very simple carbon filters, the Britas and the Brita knockoffs, those types of filters, many of them are just rated to remove things like taste and odor and chlorine. They're not designed to remove much more than that. And those types of filters aren't that effective at removing something like PFAS.
So we've been talking so much about the technologies that are available, you know, at the industrial level, but also at the consumer level. What should we know about the costs of some of these technologies?
Yeah, I mentioned before the cost of in-home drinking water filters can vary quite a bit. But overall, in-home drinking water filters might not be in everyone's budget. And that's why it's even more important in the context of EPA's announcement to finalize the drinking water standards for PFAS so that there is better drinking water quality for everyone, because it definitely isn't everyone's budget to have an in-home water filter to filter these out.
The Environmental Working Group's Tasha Stoiber. The EPA's first ever limits on PFAS in drinking water, announced last week, are already being cited in lawsuits. That includes legal action brought by more than a dozen water utilities here in California against seven PFAS manufacturers, accusing them of negligence. Time magazine reports some of the largest PFAS manufacturers, including DuPont and 3M, had preliminary evidence that forever chemicals were toxic as early as the 1960s. But it wasn't until the late 1990s that the public started to hear about their potential dangers. That's according to a study published last year in the scientific journal Annals of Global Health. In 1981, female workers at a DuPont chemical plant in Parkersburg, West Virginia, were abruptly moved away from parts of the facility involved in their production, and they weren't given much of an explanation. It turned out some workers there had given birth to babies with a series of ailments. One had the chemicals in its cord blood. Another was born with eye defects and just one nostril. PFAS exposure has been linked to developmental delays and certain cancers, among a host of other conditions. We've posted links on marketplacetech.org. Jesus Alvarado produced this episode. I'm Lily Jamali, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.